This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of perversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Welcome to a special This Just In Halloween episode, where the only frightening things you'll hear are the ridiculous beliefs of some people embracing this amazing holiday. Let me start by saying that I love Halloween. It's pretty much my favorite holiday, and the year goes totally downhill after Tuesday night. And let's face it, Thanksgiving is only about having a decent meal for once in your life this year, if you're lucky. Financial drain under the guise of charitable familial giving. So what other holiday can you think of that gives rather than takes other than Halloween? Luckily for you, Tanner and I are generous enough to give this Shocktober, and a podcast is much better than those shitty black and orange wrapped candies you'll most likely get while trick-or-treating, and 10 times better than wax vampire fangs. Look, no matter how much they're supposed to taste like cherries, you still cannot convince me they don't taste like blood. As for your host, I'm Chris View, podcasting from Detroit.
I'm Tanner Higgin, podcasting from Los Angeles.
And I have a question for you, Tanner. Given that you've spent your whole life in Michigan up until now, do you feel like you're missing out on autumn since you're out in the warmth of L.A., or were you never a fan of the changing leaves and those cold, rainy days we've had for about the past 10 days in a row here?
I mean, there's a certain mystique gone from Halloween for sure. You know, you can't, it's the same thing with Christmas, too. There's certain seasonal identifications with things that are all based on, like, the East Coast. You know, like, all holidays have been based around the East Coast in our, like, cultural imaginary, you know? So there is definitely something missing, but the cool thing about the West Coast is you get fall weather throughout the winter. So, you know, throughout the winter it's, like, you know, high 60s, 50s, that type of, you know, and sunny. So, I mean, you get it all throughout the winter, so you might not get it at the most optimal time, which is Halloween, but you get it for way longer, which is way better, in my opinion.
Yep, because I remember as a kid, I always thought to myself, how do those Southern California or those people in Texas or people in the South who are, you know, closer to the equator, how do they perceive those holidays, given that they're always shown, you know, think about it, like around Halloween time, you're seeing these traditionally, you know, these New England type haunting type shows where, you know, it's fall out, it's rainy, there's leaves all over the ground, and yet for them the seasons haven't really started here. You know, the leaves are almost gone from the trees, and or even last weekend my girlfriend and I drove from here to Toronto, and the ride there, it was beautiful. There's these fall colors, and it was the perfect time to see the changing of the leaves. But I think to myself, like, out in L.A., you don't have the same type of trees, and you don't have them dying yet, I'm guessing. And I don't know, and like you said, there is that air of mystery, that mystique to the holiday, and I think something would be detrimentally lost for me. My perception of the seasons is based on the fact that I know when the seasons are changing. I know winter's coming right now, and that if I was out in L.A. right now, it would be fucking with me to say, oh, it's November, and it's like 75 degrees out.
Yeah, it's but we had a sweet, you know, cosmic intervention, though, in the Halloween season. In that a huge wildfire just broke out,
yeah,
like 2 days ago, which turned, you know, scorched the land into like a hell on earth, which was kind of cool. And it was awesome because I was sitting in a seminar, and the professor's like, you know, because that morning I'd heard that there was a wildfire, I was like, whatever, you know, and then we're sitting in the seminar, in this room with, you know, surrounded by windows, and, like, the professor just all of a sudden goes, wow, look at that, you can see that wildfire. And, like, we look out to the window, and you could see, like, clear, you know, beautiful blue skies on one side, and then towards the south, you could see, like, this orange glow with, like, smoke and stuff. I'd never seen anything like it. You know that over there is, like, impending doom. It was, like, something out of,
Stephen King, the Towers books that he's got out.
Yeah, like Lord of the Rings or in Elder Scrolls Oblivion when you get near the Oblivion gates and like the world like crackles and like lava in the sky and shit.
That's awesome. Well, I guess you have something up on us. It's too rainy around here to have fires, so. First topic, and it's something that it's been pissing me off because, of course, every for me, Halloween should last all October, but for network television, it starts 13 days before Halloween because the number 13 is somehow, you know, it's associated with scariness, apparently. So 13 days of Halloween we've been having, and so far, all you get out of these TV stations are, you know, the reruns of films that you've seen. American Movie Classics has all the Friday the 13th and, you know, those films are showing. But then on, like, ABC Family and Sci-Fi Channel, they have that new trend in shows. And when I say new, I mean it's something that came, it's a product of, like, the mid-90s, maybe. And it's that reality-type haunting show where, like, they have ghost hunters on Sci-Fi, where the ghost hunters go into a real haunted place, and then they investigate. And then on ABC Family, they're showing reruns of some haunted show where they have these people go in, and they have psychics there, and people who say that they can communicate with the dead, and then regular Joes who are hanging out in there. And my big beef with these shows, there's a few things, but primarily the thing I've noticed most this time around, this time watching these shows, is that these people go into these houses and it's never scary. These shows are never scary.
No, never.
Because
yeah.
And there's one reason why, and it's because you see their reactions to these noises that they claim are happening, and the audio never picks it up, so they dub in audio. This is what pisses me off the most. So they'll turn around and be like, what was that? And you clearly can tell that they, like, added in, after they recorded, they ADR'd this, like, the sound of chains moving, or a rusty door closing or something, which, of course, was not the sound that they heard, but that's what they're trying to make you scared by, and it pisses me off because it's so disingenuous to do that. Mm-hmm. Why not show the, or play the actual noise that was there, and it pisses me off. And I saw that today on several of these shows, and I saw it on Ghost Hunters, and it just takes you out of the element, and it makes you, yeah, I want to be scared by it. I don't believe in ghosts, obviously, but I want to be scared by these shows, and then they do something like that, and it just seems like so contrived, and it's bullshit. I hate it.
Well, it doesn't make good television, because that type of stuff is only scary when you're in the house yourself.
Yeah.
Because the only reason why people get scared is because it's all dark and your mind starts fucking with you.
Mm-hmm.
Watching on TV, the whole mystery and atmosphere is completely removed. They're not using cinematic techniques to build suspense, you know,
right,
that type of stuff. So that's not present. So all you're doing is watching people get scared of stuff that you're not even remotely experiencing. So it's just completely boring, and it's always a letdown because they never, obviously because ghosts aren't real, they never have any real evidence.
Right.
It's always just like, well, maybe that was, you know, but there's always an explanation for it, always.
Things, okay, Ghost Hunters isn't the greatest show, believe me, I'm a fan only because it's so silly to me, but Ghost Hunters is sometimes good about saying, like, look, we found out what the sound, like, these people will be like, oh, we've heard this noise at night, and then they'll figure out, oh, it's because, you know, you didn't oil this door and the wind blows it around or whatever
mm-hmm.
it is, or the house is shifting or something like that, and they'll find that stuff out, which is cool, but then they'll go to tell these people, they'll say, we can't verify this is a haunting or not, or they'll have some kind of explanation that's just like, no, of course it's not a haunting, but then they want to give these people hope, and it's like, why not dash their dreams and say, no, your place isn't haunted, you guys are nuts. Like, why do you have to tiptoe around their beliefs? Just say, no, your place isn't haunted, guess what, you're not special. You're not as special as you thought you were. There isn't an infestation here of ghosts. We don't need to call in an exorcism or anything like that. Which, by the way, on that ABC show today, this just reminded me of it. There wasn't an exorcism, but there was who was, like, so dead serious and, like, talking to the ghost. He's like, leave this house. Leave now. And he's saying all this stuff, and he's, like, claiming to be getting chills and getting the shakes. And none of this stuff can be legitimized. To me, the viewer, I just watch him do this, and I think to myself, you're a moron. I wish I was there to tell you you're stupid. Because you're not doing anything that's making me believe that this is actually happening. Or like Ghost Hunters, where they'll have those little electromagnetic readers or whatever it is, and they'll detect when there's more electricity in the air or something like that. And sometimes they're good about it. They're like, oh yeah, there's a higher reading because there's a circuit breaker here. But then they'll say there's these spikes and claim that it's ghosts. And that's like such a leap in logic to suddenly say, oh yes, because there is this, or because there's a cold spot in the room, that means that there is a spectral presence here.
Yeah, now I mean, where's the data that proves that ghosts create cold spots?
Yeah.
There is none.
Or even like today, some guy went, he's like, yes, oftentimes ghosts like to retreat into the rooms of the house where there's less activity from human beings. And I'm thinking, where did you get this information from? Where are the facts supporting that analysis? Like, I want to see the data that says, yes, we analyze this entire house and all the ghosts congregate in the one part of the house where nobody goes. Like, there is no definitive study that states that. It just pisses me off. Everybody, it's making shit up.
The best thing is people who claim they can talk to the dead, because unlike psychics who are also fake, at least psychics have to come up with shit that somehow fits into your life, you know, and in some ways accurately predict things, or, you know, have play logic games and reason games and stuff like that. But people who say they can talk to the dead, all they have to do is walk into a room and say, I can talk to the dead, and then just start talking. There's absolutely no other qualification.
Like, there's this one psychic on the show, and she, like, there's this woman, when I tuned in, it was midway through the show, and I tuned in just as they're walking the hallway, and this one woman was supporting the psychic because the psychic was so physically drained by what happened in that room. She had channeled the energy of this spirit, and it was just so overwhelming that she was physically debilitated all
of
a sudden.
It's just theater. That's all it is. It's just all theater of the absurd, really.
And I don't know. I think that I really want to see it. Here's props to one show that I thought did it right, because it was all in the people's imagination, and it was known that, you know, what was making these people afraid was most likely not the ghosts, but them being in the situation. And that was that show on MTV back in the late 90s called MTV's Fear. And they would strap those cameras to those people and send them to, like, a mental asylum, make them sleep in a mortuary for, like, an hour, you know, being pushed into where they put the bodies and stuff. And that kind of stuff, it was intriguing because, yeah, in that situation, I don't believe in ghosts, but I definitely don't want to be put in a morgue.
Yeah.
You know, especially one that's old and creepy. I mean, the creepy fact in our minds, and it's also because we built these walls around land, and now they make these creaking noises, and that scares us. But what was great about that show is that it was genuine in that it didn't try to artificially say there was a ghost. You just saw people reacting to themselves thinking they saw a ghost. And that was kind of frightening in and of itself, because these people were suddenly becoming scared of nothing.
Yeah, they just resurrected that show as celebrities on VH1.
Is that the one with Gary Busey in it?
Yeah, it's like the exact same concept, but with celebrities. So I really hope the producers and creators of MTV's Fear are getting paid, because it's a blatant ripoff.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's the exact same show, just with celebrities.
You know what else was a ripoff? On Nickelodeon, or The Noggin, or whatever, they had Scaredy Camp, where they had these little kids, like 9, 10, 12-year-old kids, or preteens, or whatever. They were all, like, they would be part of this mystery within the camp, and then they would go around and search old houses and stuff. But they had this redhead on the show whose eyes were so far, I thought either she had fetal alcohol syndrome or she was an alien. It was impossible to tell. But that was one of those shows that was also a ripoff. But it was great because it was like these kids who were so retarded, and I don't know. If it's on again, check it out. It's got to be on this season. So anyway, all right, so I've gotten that off my chest. Let me get off another thing from my chest, and this plays into the... I remember we had a topic about psychics and how they convince themselves that they're better than your average human being, and that's their way of trying to separate themselves from the pack, because normality is too much for them to handle.
Well, because their life is so pitiful that now they have some leg up on the competition.
Well, we have a local paper here. There's two of them. There's the Metro Times and Real Detroit Weekly, and I'm sure every major city has their own. I know Seattle had their own, and Toronto has their own. But this is a Halloween issue, and there's two articles in here. The first one I would love to read to you, and I hopefully I can get through it in a good amount of time. But It's called Interview with Some Vampires. Okay, and on the side there's a picture of two women. They're probably 20 or so. One of them's got a blonde streak and jet black hair. Other than that, and black framed glasses with a crucifix around her neck. And of course, she's wearing all black and she's fat. And then that's key.
Surprise.
Yeah, that's key to the story because your typical, you know, and then the other girl is wearing this white dress and is looking off into the sun, which is intriguing because these people are vampires, apparently. So, okay, let me read this to you, though. These are these people's wacky beliefs. Victoria Flock is a vampire. She's very candid about it as the assistant organizer of the Detroit Area Vampire Meetup Group. She's part of a surprisingly large subgroup of people known as Otherkin, a term that distinguishes vampires, werewolves, fae, witches, and the like. There are several types of vampires, Victoria explained. I've personally met sanguinarians, or blood drinkers, psychic vampires who feed on life energy, incubi, who feed on sexual energy. I am a psychic vampire. That means that I don't produce enough of my own life energy, ka, chi, aura, etc., and have to take from others to live. A lot of psychic vamps are mistakenly diagnosed with bipolar disorder because of the extreme highs and lows that are common during awakening. That's in quotes. And then here's her saying, since vampirism is a real physical problem, no one chooses to be a vampire, but there's always a time in your life where you choose to either accept or deny it, Victoria said. The time when you accept what you are and begin learning to control it is what we call awakening. Usually awakening coincides with puberty. I call that...
Big surprise!
Yeah, I call that teen angst, not like you becoming a vampire. It's you trying to become, find your identity, and by doing it, taking it to the ultimate extreme. We call these people freaks in high school. Sometimes they're goth, whatever you want to call them. That's their outlet for that side of themselves.
Yeah, it's just another expression of conformity, really. That's all it
is. So, the growing use of the internet, more vampires are realizing that they aren't alone in forming loose groups, covens, or houses. More recently, she said, we have been able to create real communities for ourselves in the larger cities where population is densest, and there are usually more vampires clustered together. We're only just beginning to find each other here in Detroit, though. Raven, a sanguinarian succubus from Pontiac, first realized there was, quote, something wrong with her in October of 1999. I saw some specialists, lots of doctors who could find nothing wrong, she said. I thought I was dying. Then, while working, I unconsciously drained a coworker to the point where she passed out in the kitchen, and I suddenly felt energized. As with most vampires, she only feeds off of donors, those who agree to have their energy taken from them. Now, let me stop right here. The people who agree to have their energy taken from them already buy into the fact that you can steal their energy. Thereby, the power of suggestion is what is draining their energy. If she came up to me and said, I'm draining your energy, I would say, no, you are not. And that would be it, because my energy would remain within my body. Anything.
How much fun would it be to play along, though?
It would be great, because then at the end, like, you could pretend to be like,
ah, ah, it would be so fun, because these people are dying for you to play along, you know?
Yeah, but my primary source of source is tantric energy, that is, I feed off of sexual energy. Of the people I interviewed, only Raven said she has fed from blood. I've tasted blood, and the energy is very different, but it can be very satisfying. I believe it comes down to preference. Let me stop here again. Vampires do not have preference. They are tortured by their existence. The fact that they have to live in the night, that they have to suck the blood of people. Sure, there's going to be vampires. I'm basing this totally on lore. But there are going to be vampires who are, like, happy that they get to kill human beings, whatever. But if we're gonna start creating our own exceptions to the rule, you cannot call yourselves a vampire. You're taking what vampirism is, which is, you know, this artificial creation by humans to explain things that happened within a graveyard in a town back in, you know, 1400s, or a way to immortalize other people. But now you're taking it to another level, because we clearly know there are no such things as vampires with this new scientific revolution that began in the 18th century. We now know there are no vampires, so we can all calm that business. But these people now have to somehow find the loophole and be like, oh yeah, I am a vampire, but I am mortal. Okay, so you're not a vampire then. I also can live in the daylight. Okay, you're not a vampire then. And I also longer have to feed off of blood. Okay, you are not a vampire, then.
you don't fit any of the qualifications.
Exactly. Okay, here it goes. Here's more. Do vampires have any paranormal powers? It depends on whom you ask. According to Dominus of Madison Heights...
Yes!
Strong magical training made feeding unnecessary. When I realized the differences that I had, I figured that I was such an outcast already, I should at least be unique in my own right, so I began training the explained, continuing that people began mentoring me in different Wicca arts. They were mostly psychic abilities. They told me that these techniques were to keep me strong, healthy, and sane. Later, I realized that the skills I learned actually keep me strong enough where I do not need to feed. That's a perfect way to say, I don't like blood, it's fucking gross, and guess what? Here's that exception to the rule. I'm a vampire who doesn't need it, because I had strong mental training? Are you fucking kidding me? Dominus of Madison Heights? Madison Heights is like 4 miles from me. You're an idiot. You live in the burbs.
Okay? Yeah, go work at Kinko's.
Yeah, go work at Kinko's or Oakland Mall or something. There's a Star Theater there that's dying for you to go, you know, tell your wisdom on movies.
But you know, if you look at it from the perspective of, I mean, really all these people are doing is looking for an identity and a group and a belonging and that type of stuff. What's really different from what they're doing than from what people who, you know, say, listen to 50 Cent and start wearing, you know, I don't know, whatever the hell 50 Cent wears, his brand and stuff.
Okay.
It's the same exact thing, really, when you break it down. Just what they're doing isn't as accepted, I guess.
Right. Well, and that's true, and I guess it depends on where your market is, too. I mean, that 50 Cent wear is accepted maybe in downtown Detroit or maybe in the ATL, but it's not accepted in the suburbs or whatever. You're right. Either way, it's a search for identity, and when you search for the identity and you buy into one, then you also have to buy into the products associated. So for these girls, it's, you know, blonde and black hair dye, a crucifix, which is the antithesis of what they should be wearing as a vampire, and then you know, so yeah, they're buying into the culture in which they suddenly fit. And it is a commodification of their own conformity. That's what they're buying into conforming, even though they want to act like they're not.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting just to think of it in that way, that they're doing exactly what other people do. It's just theirs is so much stranger because there's not as many, you know. But they're doing exactly the same things.
Let me end this talk on vampires. I want to get to this other dude on the next page of this issue really quickly, but let me end the talk on vampires. This isn't how the article ends, but here's a great paragraph. Most of us have magical or psychic powers. Usually it is natural, but in some cases they are brought out. I had training to do things like predictions and persuasions, but I have natural abilities like supernatural strength and other senses. I also have recently realized that other of my kin can do things that I never imagined. But for me to get detailed into the different possibilities like shapeshifting will take too much time. Of course it will, because you have to generate the story behind shapeshifting because nobody can fucking shapeshift. God.
See, this is where it breaks off from, like, you know, people playing gangster or playing whatever the hell they do. Because now it's like this weird bridge between group identity and, like, performance, almost. Like, what they're doing is almost performance art. And that they're, you know, they're involving, like, mystical and magical things, you know?
But I guess the thing is, like, their performance art, I guess their performance art ostracizes all of us. It's not really performance art unless they acknowledge that it's an art in and of itself, but they're trying to... They're doing this under the guise that it's reality, and that you and I should buy into the fact that they're a vampire, and if we don't, well, we just don't understand. But here's my thing. Like, go prove that you are a vampire, and then disappear. You can shapeshift. So prove you can shapeshift. People be like, holy shit, and then they'll try to capture you, but you can elude that because you're a supernatural strength. And then we can hear reports about how there was a real vampire and blah, blah, blah. And then all things will be dispelled. We will suddenly realize that, you know, they exist. And end of story. We can all go on with our lives, and no vampires exist in this world. The sad truth is there are no such thing as vampires. And we're all the better for it, because if there were vampires, this world would kind of suck. I mean, I'd be watching behind my back all the time. You know, I don't want to deal with that. There's enough things to watch over my shoulder with, let alone somebody with fang.
Yeah, but really, do they really believe they can do this stuff? Because I really think it's more just performative. You know, like, this is like live-action role-playing, in my opinion, you know?
But here's where I think they break off. Okay, here's a great example. there's that show on HBO called Real Sex, and it talks about the fetishism of certain things, and of course they will feature vampires. The difference is, whenever I've seen Real Sex, and maybe there's been an episode I missed because there's about 80 of them, but when the ones I've always seen, these vampires acknowledge that they are playing out a fantasy. They acknowledge that they, in their own rooms, behind closed doors, with people who want to believe with them, they will act out these fantasies. When they go out in real life, maybe they wear the fangs, maybe that's part of their persona, but of course they don't expect their coworkers to buy into it. They realize that there is that separation, and that when they go home, it's fun because they can become their own cloistered, you know, little group of people, and there they can make believe. But they also realize that there is a larger world around them. Are saying that this community that they've built is full of people with magical and psychic powers, and then they're coming out like and saying that as though it's factual, as though it's true. And that's, I think, where the division is. Those people on Real Sex know that it's a fetish. They understand that it works for them, and it works for other people in their group, and so they're going to do it together. Whereas these people, I think, are trying to make us buy into the fact that they are vampires. They're the people who want to, like, walk up to you at a club and, like, stare in your eyes and think that they're controlling your soul or something. And meanwhile, they're just freaking you out because, like, who does that?
Yeah, but think about, you know, like a rapper like Ja Rule, who wants to portray this image that he's some gangster when he never lived that life. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing, too. He's pretending that he's done things like kill people, sell drugs, get into shootings, or beat people up, when he's never done any of these things. It's very similar to somebody going around dressing in a dark leather trench coat and black hair and saying, "I shapeshift at home." It's the same exact thing, in my opinion, you know?
But it's much less far-fetched for me to hear, like, a guy like Ja Rule or anybody who was from or you know who comes off as in that way to say, like, "Yo, I killed a motherfucker." I'd be like, "I don't know, maybe." Okay.
But yeah, I guess there is a difference there. Because when someone tells me they've shapeshift, I know for a fact they did not.
Yeah, exactly. Or I drained someone's life force. No, you didn't. Never. It's never happened. So, okay, let me get into this one really quickly because I think it was really funny. This guy's a werewolf, and of course, the picture of this guy, he's sporting a cap. He's got like a grizzly beard. He's got these big Coke bottle glasses, and on his shirt is like one of those things you can buy at any flea market in the South where there's like lightning bolts and then wolves. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so he's got one of those shirts on, and here's what he says. I didn't set out to be a werewolf, said Milrow, conspicuous in his wolf t-shirt. In fact, for a lot of years I repressed it because, frankly, it scared the bejesus out of me. When he was 10, Milrow realized his kinship with the spirit of wolf, which manifested in new thoughts, new urges, which scared the crap out of him. These are quotes from him. If a shifter isn't well attuned with their animal side, they can be taken over by it, giving in to the urges to chew on things, run around naked, or lie on the floor, which is what gave rise to the evil werewolf stereotype. Most werewolves are mental shifters, meaning they can change into wolves while dreaming or meditating. Well, that defeats the whole fucking thing of being a werewolf. If you're a goddamn werewolf, that means that at night, on a full moon, you change into a fucking hairy beast that dines regularly on human flesh or fights wars against vampires. That's the only way you are a real werewolf. This guy Milrow, the thing that's so tragic about him, he's saying that he's got this meeting group that's similar to the vampirical one, but he says, "Unfortunately, most werewolves and Therians aren't comfortable in their identities and tend to not come to me." Most of a pack right now, Milrow admitted, chewing pensively at his chicken sandwich. "I hope this article helps to get us some new members. Even if you're just interested in it, anyone can come and learn."
I picture him sitting at a table surrounded with stuffed animals like a 6-year-old girl at a tea party.
Exactly. And, like, a group of kids who just got back from, like, the Wired Frog or some local hipster hangout. They're like, "Hey, man, we want to check out what this is all about."
And he, like, buys them beer.
Milrow, go buy some beers.
And then touches them inappropriately.
Well, that's just him getting in touch with his wolf spirit.
You know, in the werewolf community, homosexuality and pedophilia is very widespread.
My sanguine addiction is not limited to just adults. Come hit. All right, let's get off the topic and on to girls' costumes. And they're very, what would you call their nature? Very risque?
Yeah, there's a switch when, I think probably around high school age, when girls stop wearing costumes like guys, you know, where you just wear something you find interesting, funny, you know, so, where you just play on identity like guys do, and girls suddenly become forced through their own will, but also, I guess, through the pressures of society, you know, and this coincides absolutely with sexual awakenings and whatnot and puberty, where they begin to stop dressing in what they would like to wear and just start dressing like whores. And I mean, when I went to college, I mean, you would be hard-pressed on a Halloween night or a Halloween weekend to see any girl not dressed like a little devil, a cat, a French maid, or a prostitute. Those were the four that were, I mean, the key costumes that every girl almost wore. And then there was like a Mystery 5 one where it could be anything with really skimpy clothes. You know, and there was, and then guys would be like, you know, movie characters or musicians or sports players or cross dressers or like, you know, and they could be anything they wanted. But I always thought it was really bizarre how girls were restricted to sort of marketing their sexuality on Halloween and becoming total sluts for the guy's own, you know, the play on the guy's own desires. Like, they, like, girls' purposes in Halloween was only to arouse men.
Right.
And they were complicit in this, which was even stranger.
I think it's interesting because I was at the Halloween store, you know, one of those Halloween USAs that they set up around here, around Halloween, and I went in there and I walked down the guys' aisle, and you see all these very, you know, you see these costumes that require intricacies like masks and you know, you're wearing these long cloaks and shit like that, or you're a pirate or whatever it is, and then you see what the girls' aisle looks like, and it's like everything is a shy's aisle is, so let's say a zombie. And then they make it so, like, the zombie was a slut before she turned into a zombie, and that's what the zombie costume is. Or, you know, a Vampirella costume, where it's, of course, you know, Dracula gets to wear his slacks and a cape and paint his face up, but the girl is now wearing, you know, this short dominatrix outfit, you know, with her tits pushing out or whatever it is. Now, I'm not complaining about these costumes. I like looking at them as much as any other man. But there is definitely this difference in what Halloween has become for the genders. And it's weird because you're right, when you're kids, you know, a little girl can be anything she wants, and then all of a sudden, once she hits that area of maturation in her life, which is circa 7th grade, 8th grade-ish, she suddenly has to start thinking, like, how can I tantalize the other sex with my costume, as opposed to, how can I look sweet on a holiday where I get to dress up? So, and I guess that segues into your suggestion. Tell everyone what your suggestion is for what women should do.
Yeah, I think it's blatantly obvious that Halloween is one of those instances where it gets brought into real relief that there isn't equality between the genders or sexes, and that, you know, even a seemingly harmless tradition like Halloween is at its heart sexist in some way, because women are only allowed to be sexual objects at Halloween, and if they don't, it's like sort of disappointing. So my solution is this, that this needs to start being fought, and that, you know, I would suggest that women start not being complicit in this, because, you know, I bet there's a lot of Sex in the City watching nouveau feminists who are more than willing to slut themselves up at Halloween and think like this is somehow empowering. But it's not. They're there simply to feed into men's desires, and that's not right. So my solution is that women should start dressing in the most hideous, disgusting costumes possible. And the goal should be to create costumes that absolutely are repulsive and grotesque and gory. I think that would be so awesome. You know, like, you could be someone with a flesh-eating disorder. You could be, you know, someone who carries around dead babies in a burlap sack like Johnny Appleseed. Like, I don't care. It just, do something that is just utterly disgusting and doesn't fit into this sexist tradition.
Yeah, and also, like, just inspire creativity in the costume. I don't find the girl with the devil's ears and, like, a pitchfork who's also wearing, you know, nothing in her midriff. I don't find that to be a creative costume. It's just, you know, a sexual costume. She's not the devil. She's not anything that actually fits into Halloween. She's just merely, you know, she just merely is a, you know, a sexual person, you know. I suggest that women come up with, you know, wear something intricate. Wear a zombie outfit that, like, you know, somebody is like slapping a stick in a mud puddle. You know, make it look disgusting, or be a cancer patient, or I don't care what it is. Do something that immediately makes men go, "What? I don't know about this one."
It would be so awesome if you think about it. It would be so awesome. Like if you go on some college campus and suddenly, all the girls walking the streets are like zombies.
Yeah,
it would be seriously like performative and like completely like antagonistic and thought provoking and political. It'd just be brilliant.
Yeah, and reward that. You know, you can reward that kind of stuff. There needs to be ingenuity, and I am getting tired of the old stagnant Halloween costumes. Even for me this year, when I was looking for mine, there wasn't much of a selection. It's like, who do you want to be? You want to be like a baseball player, a pirate like Johnny Depp? Do you want to be George Bush? What do you want to do? And it's really stupid. And like this year, I was a priest, and that wasn't very creative, but it was cool to, like, you know, be a priest because I've never wore anything like, and that was fine. And then I wanted to be like an undead priest, but then my girlfriend wouldn't let me. But,
why not?
Because, well, she had to do the makeup, so that was number one. But so anyway, but there's no, like, real good choice in costumes, and I suggest that, number one, they lower the price in costumes so that they're affordable for the layperson, and then also, like, I don't know, maybe they should offer free, at these stores, like, if you purchase the makeup, like, a free Hollywood makeup or makeover, you know, like, like have somebody come in who can do the makeup art on you and make you look like the zombie for the evening, you know, or with a certain amount of purchases, whatever it is. I don't know. Fuck it. Just do something that would be cool, because I'm tired of buying those makeup kits, and, like, you see this dude on there who's got his makeup and his face looks like it's peeling off, and then you go to do it, and it looks like you just got tissue paper that's brown on your face. Like face in a septic tank or something. So anyway, all right. I think that does in that topic.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Next topic.
I'm sure nothing will come of it. There'll be an old set of prostitutes next Halloween again.
Oh yeah, I mean even my girlfriend was scantily clad for most of Halloween, so, or for the parties we've been to. So
I just think that people need to start thinking about it. You know, being in graduate school, there's a whole lot of things now that I think about differently that I didn't think about before. You know, I always thought that was a really bizarre tradition, you know, but I had no complaints because I'm getting to see scantily clad women.
Yeah.
But now it's just, things are starting to really appear to me that, you know, are manifestations of underlying sort of sexist and racist, like, ideologies at work, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
So, man, that would be so cool if people start combating it. But
yeah, I mean, and speaking of the racial side of it, too, like, I really want it to be acceptable for me to be able to go in black like on Halloween, because that'd be the best Halloween costume ever. So, anyway. That was not racist, people. I do not want to get emails from people saying I'm racist. I'm just saying blackface was a fad, and why must it be out of the mindset? You know,
bit more than a fad.
All right.
Oh, Lord.
That will not come from the podcast.
Okay, last topic, Shaun of the Dead, which I watched last night. Which, you've seen it probably, right?
Well, no, actually, it's interesting you bring it up, because this morning I turned on the television, and it was on, but it was, like, almost all the way done. They were already in a house or something, and the zombies were breaking through the walls ever so slowly. It was the scene where the guy goes to turn on the circuit breaker, and then when he turns on the lights, there's zombies outside the window, and he just closes the drape on the window.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how far along the movie was, but
yeah, it's a cool movie, because it's sort of it's like a parody of a horror movie. You know, it's got its sort of scary moments, but it's really just taking all the conventions of a zombie film and, like, you know, playing with them and really emphasizing the the similarity between people before they're zombies and afterwards. You know, how, like, the world is full of zombies in all reality. But I had two major complaints with it, because it's a really good movie. But during the whole film, I mean, he wields, like, a cricket bat. And then they get, like, pool cues, and then they get, like, a little Winchester rifle. Mm-hmm. The whole time I'm sitting there, like, going, when is he gonna, you know, find the tool shed with a chainsaw or an axe or a shotgun? Mm-hmm. You know, I was dying the whole time for him to find something, and, like, so it could up the gore level. But he never really does.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in a zombie movie, I don't care if you're doing a parody or not, you have to get badass weapons. Because the fun part about watching a zombie movie is fantasizing that you're that guy getting chased by zombies and you're blowing people's heads off. You know, part of the main part of the appeal of a zombie movie is the fantasy of just tearing apart bodies with weaponry, you know? Don't you think that that's what it is?
Well, I agree, yeah, because part of the allure of those zombie movies is the gore, and it happens on both sides of the battle. You know, the gore happens when the humans kill the zombies, but it's also when the scary part is when the zombies kill the humans. But there is that element of fright on the psychological level where you're murdering people who were once alive. And, you know, Shaun of the Dead did address that when his mom comes back.
Mm-hmm.
He has to shoot her in the head. But this film only featured headshots and the occasional, like, jugular wound or something like that. That's what I saw at the end. And that is disappointing. I think that half the allure is, like, how are we going to dispose of these zombies in the most creative way possible?
Yeah, in gory way.
Yeah, and a movie that did this good was, I think it just came out, where they like, put together these buses, which is absurd, but they were in the basement of the mall, and they put together these buses, and then they cut out these slots in the side and put ramming things on the front, and like, they had this great scene where they're going through the zombies, and the guys in the bus have to, through the slot, take a chainsaw and, like, cut off the limbs of the zombies who are climbing on the side of the bus. And, of course, that doesn't stop the zombies, but it's just cool to see them cutting through the legs. And then, of course, the bus goes to, it, like, gets tipped or something, and then the I don't know if you saw the film, but it's great, because this one girl in the film who's kind of like the whore in the film, she's like standing there not really killing any zombies, and then the chainsaw gets pulled out, and then it slices into her right where her, like, neck and shoulder meet, and then, like, goes all the way down, and the whole time she's just going, ah! And it's like going through her. It's so funny, but it's awesome to see, and it was a creative way, you know, to murder her.
Well, I mean, zombies in themselves, to me at least, aren't that scary because they move so slow, and I guess that's what 28 Days Later sort of did kind of cool, or it made zombies actually scary, you know? But I love that they're so slow moving, and, like, I feel like I could just kick a ton of zombie ass if given the opportunity.
Or run by, at least.
So, like, I mean, when I watch a zombie movie, I want to fantasize about just destroying zombies. And I think that's one thing Shaun of the Dead really didn't do well. Is they never, maybe that was part of their plan, is not giving you that satisfaction or something and making it more real.
Well, what is your favorite zombie movie? Have you seen a lot of them, or are you not into zombie films that often? Or
Of all the ones I've seen, I haven't seen many. It was 28 Days Later, I thought, was the best.
And that one was the best, too, because it was such a different take on zombies, because it was an infection. It was something that is almost plausible, and I mean, you could at least make that leap and be like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe there is something that would do this to people. So it was taking that juxtaposition, or that correlation between, like, in the end when he's poking out the eyes of that guy, because, you know, that one soldier, and then the girl, the other female lead, sees him do this and thinks, like, oh my god, is he infected? But no, he's not. He's just a human being, like, doing these things to save his own ass and hers. And it's kind of like, it was a cool, there was almost a moral tale to it. I don't know, I liked that part of it.
Yeah, and it was just, I mean, it was shot and edited real well.
Yeah, so.
And also, there was one other complaint that you brought to my attention, that's that Shaun of the Dead has no boobs in it.
Yeah,
zero,
you need
boobs
in any zombie film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have to have them. So, well, all right, we're talking about film now, so let's wrap up the podcast with this. What is your favorite horror movie of all time? What's the one horror movie that you can watch and be like, I'm frightened of this, it's hard to even look at the screen? You know, do you have one?
See, my problem is I've never found horror movies all that scary.
You've never, like, been watching and had that emotion where you're like, ah, shit, I really don't want to see what... I want to see what happens next, but I can't look because I'm afraid I'll be scared by what happens. Like, did 28 Days Later do that to you at all?
Not really. I mean... I'm trying to think.
Because doesn't anything play into, like, your nightmares, or if you have nightmares? Because I've had films, even films that are shitty, that play into my nightmares, and that alone makes me kind of cringe when I'm watching it.
I mean, I like... I thought Saw was really good. I thought it was a really smart movie and really well written.
Okay.
But, I wouldn't say it was all that scary.
Yeah, I'm not scared by that film. And I guess this also needs to be qualified to what scares you. If zombies don't scare you, then a zombie film at bearable with the idea of being eaten alive, maybe that's what scares you. That's what scares me about zombie films. It's not the undead, it's the being eaten alive part that kills me.
I mean, what scares me in movies is more atmospheric, you know, when they create really eerie, you know, feelings of dread and stuff. I
gotcha.
Guess.
So you're a fan of Tremors, is what you're saying.
Like, I think all those Japanese horror films that have all been ruined in American adaptations, like, you know, the original
Ring or the
Grudge and The Ring and stuff, I think those would probably be more my type of movie, but I've never watched the whole thing. I've seen the Grudge, but then I caught a piece of the Japanese version, and it was just a lot more eerie, so I liked it a lot better.
I saw, like, a little snippet of the Japanese version, and it was way cooler. It was this one scene, because I saw the American version, and it was laughable. But the And I'll tell you why in a second. But the one scene with the Japanese one, there was the sound in film before really matters, especially in a horror film. And there was this one part where she was in this area of the house or whatever, and the kid, like, warped towards her and her daughter, and it was the way the kid looked. It was, and they tried to do that in America, but they really made the American version more fancy than it needed to be, and the Japanese version was just so stripped down and raw.
Yeah,
feeling.
That's the important part of that's exactly what I noticed too when I watched the portion of the Japanese film.
Yeah,
it was a lot. You know, it didn't have the huge budget and the special effects, and to me, I think that's probably what's more effective. And I guess since I only watch American movies, they just don't work on me, I guess.
Well, typically, American movies fall to the prey of, like, we need a big budget because we need to show this, and we need to have this CGI'd and whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of the best films are the ones that don't show you much but scare the shit out of you because of that not showing you. I don't know. Like, for me, one of the better scary films of all times is more... I think it's a horror film, and I talked about it on Invisible Summer when I did that Halloween feature that I did that one year in 2002, but Event Horizon scares the shit out of me. That film is freaky as hell to me.
See, I have to see it again. I know I've seen it, but I don't remember if I got scared.
Because there's, like, the sci-fi aspect of, yeah, they're in outer space, and you know, there's the spaceship that they have to explore to figure out what happened to its crew. But then there's the demonic sort of heaven and hell, you know, thing going on where these people are thrust into hell, but hell is almost explained through science fiction's, you know, perception of space and, like, space and time. And so it's not your conventional, like, oh, they just went to hell. It's more like they were in this warp of space, you know, and that time was altered. And they, because what they tried to do is they tried to create a wormhole, and then they were kind of lost within that wormhole, and that hell is there. Like, they found hell, basically, in doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And they show, like, this one scene where they're looking at what happened to the former. It scares the shit out of me because it's, like, people being eaten by demons, but it's really quick shots of it, and you just hear, like, it sounds like a Mushroom Head song, like, you know, and it's creepy. And then the rest of the film is this psychological, like, these people are exploring the ship, and then the ship itself is alive, almost, and it's, like, torturing them. It creeps me out, and it's shot really well, I think. It's got the good darkness to it, and that's another element of it, is the color of film really lends itself, and, you know, horror films try to be dark, but some don't achieve that, and I think Event Horizon had all those different elements that made it work.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that movie scares me on a level other films can't quite do. The ending is kind of silly, like where Sam Neill is on fire and shit like that, but at the same time, it's still, I'm into it at that point, so it doesn't matter that much.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think most American horror films just try to go for you know, those shock scares, which are really aren't that effective. You know, and then they go
you
for
know,
the big budgets.
The Ring kind of got me. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, that those are the two things that I think ruin most of them for me, is that they rely too heavily on shock value, and then they rely too heavily on, you know, big budget special effects that don't give you that good atmosphere, the realistic atmosphere.
Oh, and really quickly before we end this, the reason why The Grudge sucked is because the dead things in The Grudge are fucking hilarious looking.
I know.
Like, when that girl's climbing down the stairs, I was laughing. When the kid opens his mouth and goes like, or what, it makes a meowing noise like a cat or whatever, it makes me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the theater with McKitty and Pickard, and we were laughing our asses off.
Yeah, it's really badly done. I wasn't scared at all during that movie, which is... During The Ring, I was actually scared at certain points.
Me too. So anyway, well, feel free to submit to us between now and Tuesday what your most horrific films are, and we can post them on our blog, which, by the way, is active again, because I've been posting a lot politically since we are within a few weeks. Feel free to check out the blog. If you don't agree with my politics, I don't give a shit. We can debate it all you want.
Because we'll you're wrong. We're right.
Yeah. Always. So, but feel free to post, and there's... We now have comments available, so leave your comments, because what you have to say is important, unless it's stupid. We are not winning fans today with blackface and stupid comments. So. All right. Hey, do you have a scary song to put at the end of this? Like the Monster Mash?
Yeah, real scary. The song we paraded around school, elementary school.
Too. Yeah. I hated those parades because everyone got to see how low rent my costumes were.
Yeah, it really exposed the poor kids, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like the kids who had those, you know, with the plastic mask with the rubber band behind it, and then like the vinyl costume with like He-Man painted on it.
Yeah.
I always felt bad, you know, when you saw those kids.
Plastic costume, like they had the plastic Spider-Man outfit, you know, it wasn't even a real fabric, it was just plastic around their body, or, and then you saw, like, the rich kids always had the real Freddy Krueger glove with a real Freddy Krueger mask and top hat. Those were always the rich kids in our school.
Yeah, that is kind of funny when you think back there, that parade really just completely economically stratified everyone. Everyone knew where everyone was at economically.
Yeah, like my homemade ninja suit just didn't cut it, you know. or my Superman outfit that was like my brother's, you know, years before me and was handmade by my mom. That wasn't cool.
Oh, it's funny and tragic at the same. Yeah. Oh, I've got a great story about that too, because I remember every time on Halloween we'd go home at lunchtime or whatever. Everyone would put on their costume, come back, and then, like, we'd go around the room and everyone would explain what they were, and then we'd do the parade. And, like, in second or third grade, there was this kid named Martin, and he was one of those poor kids, you know, and all he came to school with was, like, a torn T-shirt and, like, blood on his face. And the teacher's like, Martin, what... Oh, this is one of my favorite stories of all time. Like, Martin, what's your costume? And he's like, I've been raped! And the teacher was just, I mean, she was like, oh my god, Martin, that's inappropriate. But the best part is, I imagine his dad or whatever, you know, him like, Dad, I need a costume. He's like, yeah, put this blood on your face. And here, take this T-shirt. He's like, what am I? He's like, you've been raped, asshole.
Or he's like, you're your mom, and then Martin added in the, I've been raped. You're your mom after I beat her on Thursday nights after bowling.
Oh, hopefully Martin isn't listening to this podcast.
He doesn't know who he is anymore.
Alright, that's it.
Alright, see you guys next Halloween. That's the next podcast.
You have been listening to a special Halloween episode of This Just In, recorded and distributed on Sunday, October 29th, 2006. For more information, visit www.the-means.com.
Deceive my trees onto everywhere. Nightmare. She was perfect with this type of milky white skin.